Hey there, and welcome to a new episode of my weekly show. I am Father Roderick, and it is almost Christmas time. We even got some snow last week, and it was awesome. Now, I don't know if we're going to have a white Christmas, but the snow is already in the pocket, as they say. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Just like any other episode that I produce, this show is brought to you thanks to my patrons. And with their support, I can keep this episode and all the other episodes advertisement free. I personally listen to a lot of podcasts, and I always hate it when in the middle of a good discussion, they start talking about pillows or mattresses that I have to buy or whatever, snacks or something like that. I was like, I'm not listening to you. I'm wasting my time on these advertisements. Well, one of the decisions that I took a while ago is, you know, I want my stuff, my programs to be advertisement free. But for a lot of podcasters like me, this is a source of revenue that falls away. But thankfully, we have patrons. So go over to patreon.com/FatherRoderick if you want to support me and keep this advertisement free. And as a thank you, I give my patrons every week an episode, a special episode of The After Show, which is a show that I record, well, when your podcast is over, then it's not the end of the story because I continue the conversation in the after show and my patrons can listen to that. You can subscribe to it. It's a very nifty system that Patreon provides us with. So as soon as you become a patron, you get this special link that you can put in your podcasting software, and it will show up as any other regular podcast. And it's an amazing thing to do something special for the people that do something special for me. So thank you so much if you're already a patron. And if not, well, always grateful for your support.
Do you know what's going on?
This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
So Christmas is in about 7 days, or 6 or 7 days. It's unbelievable. I'm recording this on Tuesday, and on Monday it's the 24th, and so on Tuesday. Yeah, so it's in a week from now. It's going incredibly fast. It's always the case with December anyway. December is over before you know it. And then January, oh, it takes forever. And it's cold and it's raining most of the time here in the Netherlands. And you want springtime to begin. Well, anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Christmas is coming soon. And one of the things that I'm currently doing is wrapping up stuff, making sure that everything is in place so that I can actually let it go. How thematically apt to use that song, which is kind of linked to Frozen Christmas, etc. But anyway, I want to let go of my work, of the things that have kept me more than busy this year, and then take 2 weeks off. Of course, I still have to be present in the parish, and there are lots of liturgical celebrations. But work-wise, I'm more or less free. I have time off. And then in the second week of January, we'll start up again. Now, I say more or less because there are still a lot of things that are going to happen over these next 2 weeks, one of which is that they are going to build an entire set in the other room. I'm recording this in Studio One. There's a bigger room on the opposite side of this studio, which used to be the office of Martin, where Martin Vriens is working. But he moved upstairs. So that room is now my planning room. That's where I sit. We have the Mac there and a whiteboard, and that's where I plan all the shows that we're producing. But even that is going to go away because we are building a set for a very exciting pilot that we're going to start next year, which is only in a few weeks from now. And that is we're going to combine the television shows that I produce in the Netherlands with live streaming on Facebook. And this is something very new in the world of television, at least in the Dutch part of that world. So we're going to do live streaming right after the television episode. People can go on the internet, go to Facebook, and we'll have a live conversation just like I have every week when I record this show. There's always a live audience or people in the chat room, and I can react to what people are telling me. And since this is kind of non-scripted, I can also take advantage of that live stream to really go back and forth between my audience and my world, and people can participate in the show much more. But in order to do that, the television way is not just going to be this green screen that I currently use. No, they're going to build an entire set. So there's been a set dresser here whose work is to build sets for TV, and he does big productions, but also smaller ones. And so he has designed a background, a table, and it's all like, wow, I knew that people like that existed. But if you see a professional looking at a small, it's still a relatively small room compared to the bigger studios that we normally use for this kind of stuff. But when you see how he designs that and the kind of the whole creative process, I learned a lot from that. But this is all kind of really, we're in a rush to finish that. So they're going to build that in the first week of January, because the second week we're already going to use it. There's someone else coming for the lights. It's someone who's a special, because that's another profession. And I am asked to provide a list of hardware that we need. And at first I thought, well, it's going to be easy. I'm already streaming, so we can use this computer for that as well. But then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, no. That's probably not going to be workable, because I can't record my podcast, my international work, in the studio, because that one is built on purpose for my TV show. Plus, the computer is here, and I'm not going to move the entire computer, which is encased in a metal box, and it's got lots of wires and it's connected, and I have the setup so that I just have to flip on the switches and I can start recording, and I'm doing this and it becomes a routine. Well, if you have to move the computer from one room to another several times a week, then that's going to be the end of the fun. So we're going to have to use another computer. We need a camera. I can't use a webcam. I'm using a webcam for my weekly shows, and that works fine because I'm just sitting behind my desk and it's mounted on the computer. But you can't do that for a live stream that is when you're filming an entire set. You need a real camera. This is a real camera as well, but you need a different type of camera. So I'm researching that. Then the signal of the camera has to go into the computer. What software are we going to use? I'm using VidBlaster for this show, but we can't really do that for the other room because VidBlaster requires a lot of setup. And we want to have something that is very versatile, is easy to use, and so that we can also have someone else doing, the logos, the whatever. One of the pieces of software that I hope to be able to use is Ecamm, which is created for the Mac. And that allows you, for instance, if someone leaves a comment on Facebook, you can put that on the screen and I can react to that. And even when the recording is over or when the show is over, in the recording you will see those comments. And that is pretty essential because the every live show is also going to be stored on the television website so that people can watch it after the fact as well. So, but then that's Mac software. It's not available for Windows. It means we need to have a Mac. Do I have a Mac? I have an iMac, but I'm not sure if it's fast enough for this kind of work. And it certainly doesn't have an input for professional camera. So anyway, still working out all the details, but time is ticking, and I really am going to take some time off after Christmas. I promise myself that. And it's a good training for me to not worry too much about this. This is something that the broadcasting company asks me to arrange this, but it doesn't mean that I'm fully responsible for everything. I can outsource as well. And no matter what happens, when it's time to stop, I'll stop. And that is one of the biggest lessons that I've learned since I've moved to the other rectory in the village nearby, close to the city. When I'm home, I'm home. And whatever is work-related will have to wait until the next morning. And so that creates a mindset that makes it possible for me, for the first time in decades, to let go of work and to also protect the time that I have to recover. And I think that is going to benefit my creativity. It's going to benefit my health, my mental health. So it's something I hope I can do also with these bigger projects. And that's not the only thing that's currently happening, since we're, sharing the news. I'm also excited to tell you that I'm in talks with two new people that will join the Tridio crew and that will help me produce the shows. Now, we're not talking full-timers. We're probably going to have each person working one day per week for us. But still, it is going to be a massive increase in the type of professionals that we have in this group, and then we'll be five. We'll be five people plus. We have we've outsourced our technical work to David, who has an internet company or a website company. Also, one of my new parishioners. So he's part of the crew as well. Plus, we have our editors. So in 2019, we'll have 7 to 8 people working for Tridio on a regular basis. I can honestly tell you, this is a dream come true. I hoped that I would be able to do this when I'm 50 years old. 10 years ago, when I was recording podcasts, I was already projecting this dream. And I held on to it, even though we've gone through so many difficult times. But I knew that if I would follow this goal and I would pursue it, I would get there. And now we are there. And this is amazing. And I can't wait to grow even further and to reach even newer heights. And always, you know, like Steve Jobs says, stay hungry. And that's what I definitely try to apply in my day-to-day life. So that's what's going on for Tridio, for the work that I do. Personally, I'm still working on making my home cozy and comfortable, and that's taking so much more time than I ever thought it would. If you follow me on my other show, The Walk, which you can find over at tridio.com/The Walk, I talked a lot about decluttering, about simplifying, and when it comes to moving, I was working on reducing my clutter to a maximum of 10 boxes, 10 moving boxes. Well, I also discovered that that is really hard. And even though I continue to declutter and to simplify my life and to become more of a minimalist, it is a process that also takes time. And sometimes it's just not practical. And so one of the things that I'm discovering is I have this big house with a lot of rooms. I have a number of bookshelves, but I don't have any books to put in those bookshelves, and so it looks empty. It looks like I'm in let's say even IKEA is more cozy than my home. And so I stored a lot of the books that I think I'm not going to read anymore. I stored them in boxes, and I was ready to give them away. And now I'm thinking twice. I'm thinking, well, perhaps I'm not going to read them all, but they do decorate and they do make my home a little bit more, I don't know, more feel more like a home. So perhaps I'm going to take some of those boxes and bring them over. I'll still select, you know, the books that are really have value to me. And if a book really, I'm never going to read it and I don't care for that book, I will not put it on the bookshelves. But a few books may help create a cozier atmosphere. One of the other reasons for me to do that and to work on that is that on Christmas, I will host my family. So my parents and my sister, my nephews and niece are coming over. And I want the house to look at least a little bit cozy. So last Wednesday, I spent an entire day with two other people in my parish to put some lamps on the ceilings. I'm not totally happy with that. I also discovered that lighting an apartment is actually quite a craft. It's not something you just... you don't have a nice lighting in your house when you're just putting up some spotlights that you bought. And so I'm also learning by making mistakes in that respect. And so some of those lamps will have to go again and we'll have to put some other lamps in place. But over time, I think this is going to be a really nice place to live in. I'm making the most progress on my two rooms, which are the rooms in which I live the most. Actually, three, because I have my sleeping room, but I'm unconscious when I'm there. But the two other rooms that I really love in my new home is I have a hobby room. It's the room where I have my PC, and it's the room where I now have my creativity station. I'm not sure how to call it. So I've got a sit stand desk from IKEA, the cheapest one that they have. It's about $200. And it is the perfect table for Lego projects. So I'm currently building Wall-E in Lego. I've been wanting to do that for years. And now I finally have a big table on which I can store all the parts and I can just leave it there. I don't have to clean it up. So that's really, really cool. And then the next project is going to going to build Hogwarts in Lego. So that's a really big project. That's going to take me a couple of weeks. So I'll do that after Christmas probably. So that's one room that I really like being in. And then the other room is my writing. I call it the writing room. It's where I have my little hobbit corner. It's a little table in the literally in the corner of the room. I've got some bookshelves, again, empty. And that room, at first I thought that's going to be my hobbit-themed room because it felt a bit like, you know, Bag End. Now I'm thinking this is going to be more of my Harry Potter-themed room. This is so I have a wand. I've got a little dragon that I bought at the Midwinter Fair, and I've purchased I'm looking for the word in English, but anyway, it's the thing that encases a painting. So I bought a couple of those, and I'm gonna paint the paintings myself. So that's another dream come true. I've always loved as a child. I was always drawing. I was always painting. I loved doing that. And then I went to secondary school, and then the computers entered my life. And I thought, well, that phase is over now. And in seminary, and later on as a priest, I never went back to drawing. And now I'm thinking, why not? I love doing that. And so I'm reintegrating that in my life. I want to do some painting. I also really now know. I know what I want to paint. I want to paint my own paintings in the house. And I'm not good at that. I never really got any training in this. But I do have an eye for composition because of my camera work. I have an eye for colors. I have plenty of stuff that I want to paint, stories and scenes and geeky stuff. But I'll probably have to learn that. Let's see. The sound is not good, according to Martin. So I don't know what's going on with the sound. Well, anyway, for me it's good. What's it? Oh, so there's an echo. Well, I can't solve that, Martin. I'm sorry. I guess it's. I don't know why that is. Do you guys in the chat room hear an echo? In case, for me, the most important thing is that it doesn't end up in the final recording. But so Martin is always here to get me off track, because now I don't know why that echo is there. It may be on his computer alone. I'm looking at the chat room. There's a bit of a delay, so they can usually tell me if there's an echo or not. And otherwise, it's just Martin. So let me know in the chat room if you hear an echo. In the meantime, I will just continue talking about the news I almost wrapped up. So working on that Harry Potter-themed room. And that's also something that I'm going to continue over the holidays. Let's go to the movies. And oh yeah, this jingle has a very long intro, so I'm sorry about that. In the meantime, I'm debugging the show while I'm recording it. This is not fun. let's see. Okay, yes, there is an echo. Okay, a Cylon-like thing. I really, honestly don't know what is causing that, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize if there's an echo.
I do not like movies.
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl, and that kid sees dead people, and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
So again, my apologies to the people that are watching this in the live stream. Apparently, there is an issue with the sound. What I do know is there is no issue with the recording. That is why this is a podcast first and video later. I don't have the people here that can debug this, and I need to focus on the content. So, well, that's all I'm going to say about it. I hate it when this happens. Technology is great, but it always goes wrong as well from time to time. And then I'm just sitting here and I was like, people are knocking on my door in the middle of a show and I can't fix it anyway. So technology. Anyway, movies. I watched Ralph Breaks the Internet. It's the sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, which was one of my favorite animated movies of a couple of years ago. That was all had a ton of references to the world of video games, vintage video games. This sequel it also has a lot of references to video games, but it moves also to the wonderful world of the internet. I love the premise of the story. Of course, I'm not going to spoil the overall plot, but it tells the story of Ralph that we know and his friend that he met in the first movie. I forgot her name. Do I have that somewhere? I did have a review. I usually have IMDb open, but again, that's how unorganized I am. There should be another window open where I can find that, I hope. No. Ralph, let me look that up. Ralph Breaks the Internet, a movie review. I should not do this while I'm recording this show. Vanellope. No wonder I don't remember the name, because it's Vanellope. Voiced by Sarah Silverman. Ralph is voiced by John Reilly. In case you have not seen the first movie, in a nutshell, these characters live in vintage video games. And then something goes wrong and they meet each other and they help each other and all is good. Well, this movie, 6 years later, still taking place inside that world of vintage video games in a old video arcade. I'm not even sure that those exist anymore. But anyway, that's kind of the premise of the story. And the problem is that by Ralph's actions, something breaks. And this is kind of a MacGuffin of the story. Vanellope's character needs a new steering wheel, like in the real world, a steering wheel for her arcade game. Otherwise, her game's going to be shut down and she's going to be homeless. And so Ralph and Vanellope have to somehow figure out how to make money on the internet. So that's how they enter the internet, to get that steering wheel. That's all I'm going to say about the plot. The movie has millions and millions of references because it both refers to the real world of the internet and has a lot of product placement. That's the only thing that I really disliked about this movie. It's how many logos, most of them are also somehow in cahoots with Disney. So there's like every phone in the movie is an iPhone. I was like, come on, that's not realistic. Anyway, so there is a lot of product placement. And then there are also references to fictitious brands. So it's funny that everything that is somehow remotely related to Disney is used as a regular brand. But then as soon as they want to have a Google-like entity, it all of a sudden it's not Google, but it is something else. Well, Google is there, but they're making fun of it. So anyway, it's interesting how they did that. It is very funny. And this is really a freeze frame movie with so many funny details in the background. The internet looks a bit like the huge city of the Fifth Element. And that's fun. It's how I imagine. It also is very similar to what the Emoji Movie did. Now, I wasn't really hating on the Emoji Movie. I thought it was actually quite fun as a movie. It's not going very, very deep. But it wasn't the superficial cash grab that everyone said it was. But this is a much more intelligent take on the whole internet. Plus, it has a lot of deeper themes that I think most kids that watch the movie won't pick up on. But their parents will do. And this is a movie about friendship, and that you don't have to be the same and don't have to like the same things to be friends. And this is also definitely about growing up. Ralph and Vanellope are friends, but there's also a bit of a parent-child kind of relationship between the two. So this is also about children changing and growing up and starting to like other things. And then how are you going to react to that as a parent? So it's also about the loss of childhood in a certain way, the having to let go of your children. There are a lot of themes, I think, that will resonate a lot with families on all levels. That's one of the qualities, I think, of the movie, that they were able to do that and to create a story that is multi-layered, not just in terms of plot lines, but also who it caters to and who it tries to reach with its message. So definitely a movie that is worth seeing more than once, if only because it's a little bit long. It's 112 minutes, which is kind of long for an animated movie. And towards the end, it started to drag a little bit. I really enjoyed the first part, and then somewhere, and it was right around the time that something important happened, I noticed that I fell asleep. Now, and I watched this during the day. So, of course, I was a little bit tired that certainly didn't help. But it was also because it was I was losing interest a little bit. And when I, like, I don't know, I must have been asleep for a few minutes. I didn't miss that much afterwards. And so it's, but still, it felt a bit long. Now, probably if I see it a second time, I'll have a different impression of it. But just know that. There is one post-credits scene that is absolutely worth watching. The credits themselves are also beautifully animated. There's a lot of love that goes in the way they do. The credits are tons of little jokes hidden in there. So that's fun. For me, the highlight, the comedic highlight of the movie is definitely the scene that you've probably also already watched in one of the promos or the trailers for the movie. In which Vanellope's character, who's, you know, like, technically spoken a Disney princess, she meets the real Disney princesses. And it makes so much fun of all those tropes that we know from the Disney movies and what Disney princesses are supposed to act like. And there's this hilarious theme that the princesses tell, well, when we're down, I'm not going to say what it is, but we do this and that. And then Vanellope's character is like, but I've never done that. So how does that work? And then all of a sudden there's this scene. You'll recognize it. And if you've already seen a movie, you know what I'm talking about. There's this surprise moment in the movie where it's like, oh, this is just like any other Disney movie. But it's also with a little bit of humor and it's making fun of it. And at the same time, it's also respectful. But it's great, great scene. The movie is just extremely diverse and it changes all the time. And there's a lot to see. So definitely a really, really great movie. Perhaps for me, since I had such high expectations towards the end, I was like, okay, I really, really liked this movie, but it wasn't the same as the first one that for me was a revelation. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so creative and so well done. The second movie is a worthy sequel. It didn't blow me away as much as I hoped it would be, but still extremely enjoyable and just one of those sequels that works. And that's what you want sequels to do, right? They need to work.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
All righty. So we are in the book segment and talking about books. I made a big mistake. Normally when I subscribe to something, I mark it in my calendar when that subscription expires. And I did that for a subscription that I launched last year, started last year. It was a big investment, but I wanted to give it a try, and it was Marvel Unlimited. So Marvel Unlimited, you pay, what is it, $60 a year, and you get unlimited access to the entire back catalog of Marvel comics. So it's got everything that is Marvel related, but it also has Star Wars, because that's now also part of, you know, the Disney Marvel Lucasfilm merger. And so it has these comic book versions of Star Wars stories, both movies, but also expanded universe. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to get that subscription. However, I noticed that, and this is because of my eyes, I'm getting older and I have trouble reading comics on a small screen, even though I love the functionality of Marvel comics where they will zoom in on the individual panels of the comic. That makes for much easier reading, but it's still a bit straining on the eyes to read that from my iPad. I've got an iPad Air 1. I guess that with the iPad Pro, you see what I'm doing here? I'm rationalizing the purchase of a big screen iPad Pro. On a bigger iPad, it would be so much more relaxing, and it would be really, I know it's expensive, but think of your age and what your eyes deserve. Uh-huh. I'm talking to myself right now, sorry. but I just ended up not reading as many comics as I thought I would. And so I figured I'm just going to do this for 1 year and I'm going to end the subscription. I forgot. And so automatically my subscription was renewed for an entire year. So that made me think, well, then I want to read some comics. I want to make my money back. And so I'm now currently reading the comic book adaptation of The Last Jedi. And oh my gosh, it is amazing. It is absolutely absolutely amazing. I'm usually not that excited about a comic, certainly because this is just based on a movie, but it is so good. And what it does so well is that it improves on a movie. And I'm saying this as a huge fan of Star Wars in general, and I was also a fan of The Last Jedi. I'm not one of the haters. You know that. I really liked what Rian Johnson was doing with this movie, and I stand by that. I think he was very courageous. I also understand why a lot of people didn't like the movie. My brother was one of them. He hated that movie. And hated it for many, many reasons. I can follow that, and yet I still like that Star Wars took chances. And what damaged the movie was, I think, the lack of follow-up on some of the stuff. They rushed through it. There was too much that they basically tried to tell the story of two movies in one movie. Now, that is good for the pacing, but it's not good for the balance of the movie. And there were a lot of themes and moments in the movie that were kind of left hanging. And George Lucas did that all the time, so it's nothing new. What the comic does really well, even though the comic actually has to tell the story even faster, but for some reason, they managed to slow down certain things and explain them better. And it is done sometimes with one panel, and you're like, oh, now I get this scene. Now it works. Why didn't they do this in the movie? Well, one of the reasons I think that this is such a success is that Gary Whitta, who was the original screenwriter for Rogue One, he wrote the script for this comic. And It is unbelievable what he was able to do with just a few lines of dialogue, the existing scenes that we know, and just giving us this little extra that makes that scene work. I almost wish that Gary had been, you know, advising perhaps Rian Johnson and the other people over at Lucasfilm for The Last Jedi. I think what he adds to the story could have benefited the Last Jedi tremendously. I'll give you one example. The infamous, for many people that are critical of The Last Jedi, infamous scene in which Leia is ejected into space because of Kylo Ren. And she's floating there, and you think she's dead. And it's like, oh. And then all of a sudden, you see her finger twitch, and she uses the Force to drift back Mary Poppins style to the spaceship. And that's where she ends up in a coma. Now, I remember seeing that, and even I was like, oh, that doesn't work. That is so stilted and not well. I get that they do this. It doesn't bother me to. After all, you know, Leia is a Skywalker, so she has a certain mastery of the Force. But the way it was filmed, it felt like really strange and not. It didn't have the impact. Instead, I was like, oh, that looks really like fake and bad CGI and Mary Poppins like. And my brother was even more like, oh, that ruined the movie. Well, I wouldn't go that far. Well, in the comic, it totally works. And Gary even managed to add some of the spunk that of Carrie Fisher's character and her style into that scene. So I'll tell you what he does. You see this explosion. You see Leia floating there. And then you read her thoughts or projected thoughts or whatever. And then so this is the end. And, well, no, I have the Force too, or I can see my own future. And, you know, this, the end, heck no. And then she uses the Force and it's like that, heck no. That is so Carrie Fisher. That is so Leia. And the movie needed that. If only they had, you know, her, of course, in space, you can't hear someone whisper, but I wish they had somehow created this inner dialogue, or monologue, because it totally works. Like, heck no, I'm not. And that shows that Leia is in control. And in the movie, you have to guess that. In a comic, you can show what's truly going on inside her mind and how much that fits her character and fits the storyline. And wow, I was blown away. And that happens in less time visually than the movie takes to show that. That is the strength of this comic book. And there are much, much more examples of that where I, in a few pictures, this comic book retells the same story, but so much better. I am blown away. Go read this. I don't know how, but get the comic, buy it, get the paper version, subscribe to Marvel Unlimited. It is absolutely amazing. And I really want Gary to write more comics and to do, I don't know, give me some more adaptations of the existing movies. I think he does wonders. And it's, of course, Gary, but also the illustrator. It's kind of shocking that I don't know who did this. Because those are the artists, and they're rarely highlighted. Let me go to the Wikipedia. Let's see who did the... Walsh. What's his first name? Michael Walsh did the illustrations for this. There are how many episodes now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think 7 or 8. I'm not even sure if this is already finished. Oh no, it goes to 6 actually. And then there's a paperback of the entire thing. Go get that. It's worth it. So anyway, kudos to Gary Whitta and to Michael Walsh for the tremendous job that they did. If only every comic book adaptation of any movie would be this quality. Time for the Peculiar Bunch.
Catholics rock!
Here at the Peculiar Bunch, we are always happy to tell you and explain to you things that happen in the Catholic world, things you may have never asked.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
Oh, meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And in this episode, I want to talk a little bit about the Virgin Mary. She has a pretty important role in the story of Christmas and the Nativity.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
So, the Virgin Mary, of course, one of the main principal roles in the Nativity story. She is visited by the angel Gabriel with the message she's going to be the mother of God. And then with that, she becomes basically the hinge of our history, where everything changes when Christ is born, at least for Christians. And so normally, it's kind of logical that Mary has become such an important figure, not just in those stories, but also for Christianity in general. Without her, yes, without her participation in this the plan of salvation, I wouldn't be here. The history would have looked completely different. So the role that she plays, of course, in Catholicism is huge. And not just in the Catholic Church, also in the Orthodox churches, the Virgin Mary is a very, very important figure. And also a person, just as much as we pray to God and to the Father and to the Holy Spirit and to Jesus, people also pray to Mary. It's different, and it's always hard to explain this to people from other backgrounds, especially from a more Protestant background, where they are very critical of that place that Mary occupies in the Catholic tradition. We worship God. We don't worship Mary. We venerate Mary, just like I can venerate my parents or important people or I don't know, I venerate George Lucas in a certain way. But there's a substantial difference between Mary. She's a creature. She's a human being, just like me, just like you. There's nothing divine about Mary, except for the fact that she has become the mother of God by that. And she has a special status in the history of our salvation, but she's not God, and she's not a divine person, and so she should not be worshipped, because you only worship God. Otherwise, it's false God. Well, the thing is, and that's, of course, one of the issues that Protestantism had with this, we are just human in the way that we express our faith. And so sometimes the Virgin Mary has become almost like a goddess, and there are lots of let's say, more New Agey interpretations of her role, where she is kind of promoted to the status of like she's the mother god and all that. And a lot of those elements are actually not Christian in its origin, because if you look at the Bible stories, the biblical role of Mary is very limited and very humble. And there is not one single moment in the Gospels that you will see Mary being placed on the same level as God or as her son even. So she has a minor, a humble role that kind of fits her vocation as the mother of God. But Christianity has also had a lot of influences from existing religions, from female characters that preceded Christianity. And I read some comments of a theologian that I know quite well, who went to an exposition about Egyptian religion. And he said, I was shocked to see, I kind of knew this intellectually, that there were a lot of elements from the Egyptian goddesses that kind of were translated and transmogrified by Christianity. And that's kind of what Christianity has done a lot in the history, is take certain pagan elements and give it a new Christian meaning. Doesn't mean that there is no basis for it in history, but it's just the way that Christianity is always very culturally open and is always transforming the culture and giving it another meaning. That's the wonderful thing about symbols and symbolism and stories. You can give it another meaning, and that has happened with a lot of people, a lot of objects, and a lot of traditions. Let's say Candlemas, for instance, comes from originally from a pagan procession. And then a pope said, well, let's do this procession. You can't take that away from people because they love walking around with candles. Well, let's dedicate that to the Virgin Mary, who was kind of the candle bearer of the light of her son, blah, blah, blah. I'm saying that's not very respectful of me to say blah, 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 but this is kind of how it works. So you take something that exists already, that perhaps has a pagan meaning, and you give it a new Christian meaning. And that's literally bringing the gospel into the culture. It's another word for evangelizing. Evangelizing is bringing the evangelium, the message of the gospel, into the world, into the culture. And that has happened a lot also with the Virgin Mary. Now, of course, you always have to stay vigilant how far that goes. And devotion and popular religion always needs correction. That is why in the Catholic Church we have authority. We have a pope, we have bishops that have the authority to say, well, these are the limitations and this is allowed, this is doctrine, and this is not. This is heresy, this is derailing, and let's stop here and let's go back to, well, that is a process that has happened over the past 2,000 years. And let's be honest, already happened before the birth of Christ also. There's this constant adjustment and rethinking of doctrine and of the legacy of previous generations, and there's always course correction happening. It doesn't mean that the truth, by the way, is relative and that you can just bend it and change it if necessary. There are a lot of things that are just as true now as they were 2,000 years ago. But there are also aspects, especially when it comes to the devotion and the expression, liturgy, for instance, what you see at Christmas in church, the way that we express our faith, that has been changing and still is changing over centuries. And so people that try to fix this or that are nostalgic about a certain type of liturgy that used to be the norm 100 years ago are, I think, falsifying history or not understanding how this evolution in history of our expression changes with the culture, with our language, with our sensibilities. And that the church needs to course correct from time to time. And that is definitely the case. That was kind of the I think the aim of that theologian is like, well, we need to be vigilant because there are definitely tendencies sometimes in the Catholic faith to put Mary on a pedestal where she would herself be very uncomfortable. And we all always have to look to her role with a theological eye. She's not just some mother goddess, kind of warm, feely, touchy, you know, like we need female figures in religion. Mary can be. No, it's all about, does it make sense in the history of salvation? And one thing that is absolutely rock solid in the Catholic faith is that Mary is a creature. She's not God. And so whatever she brings about with her prayers is not her own doing. Mary is interceding. That's why we call her prayer intercessionary prayer. So she is praying for us. We are praying to her, but basically what we're doing is we're asking her to pray for us. We're not going straight to Mary and is like, can you fix this? That's kind of how we sometimes in our shortcut language do this, like, Mary, I hope you can help me with this and that. But ultimately, anything that Mary can do for us is through her son, through his strength. Her son is God. We're not. But she is close to her son, of course, as the mother of God. And that's how we look at saints in general. So anyone who is in heaven is a saint, even if they're not necessarily being proclaimed a saint. But what we think they are doing, what we hope and believe they are doing for us, is they pray for us. Just like we pray here still on earth for each other. We can pray for each other. I can pray for you. You can pray for me. There's nothing wrong with that. I can ask someone, can you please pray for me? Pope Francis does it all the time. So theologically, there's no problem with that. Well, we believe that people, when they die, are still, you know, their souls live with God. Mary lives their soul and body close to her son. We can ask her to pray for us as a mother, and that's what she will do. But something that always helps me to understand Mary's role in salvation history is the story of the wedding at Cana, where there's no more wine, and Mary goes to her son Jesus and tells him they have no wine left. And then Jesus is like, well, is that your problem? And my time hasn't come yet. And she insists. And well, actually, she doesn't even insist. She just goes to the personnel and says, just do what he tells you to do. And that's how, for the first time, water is changed into wine. And the first public miracle of Jesus, that's the start of his mission. But it shows you, I think, in a very easy to understand story, what Mary's role is. She's literally interceding for the people that are in distress. She's bringing it to her son, and it's Jesus who performs the miracle. And what she teaches the personnel over at the wedding is, do be like her. Listen, say yes to whatever he tells you to do. And if you do that, miracles will happen. So that, for me, is always an important story that can course correct some of our sometimes exaggerated devotion to the Virgin Mary as if she is some kind of magician, some kind of female wizard or witch or whatever who can just flip her fingers and do miracles. That's not how the Force works. That's not how the Virgin Mary works. And that's important to know and to remember. And with that, it is time for some technology.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device, and it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner built,
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
Technology, it is everywhere in my life, and sometimes technology works, and sometimes it promises a lot but doesn't deliver, and that is the case for my projector that I have looked for years. I always thought, why do people buy these big screen televisions? If you just get a projector, you can get like a cinematic screen at only a fraction of the cost of a television. So I got myself this short throw projector. Short throw means it doesn't need to have a big distance to the wall and to project a big screen image. The way it works is it has a kind of a circular mirror. So through a very nifty system of mirrors, it projects the screen from a very short distance to the wall, but still can create this big 100-inch screen. I was looking for an LG projector. And it was still a bit pricey, so I waited for sometimes people will send their stuff back to Amazon. They can't sell it as new, and instead they will sell it for a lower price, but they will mark even sometimes completely fake defects. So this one said it was more than 150 off, and it said there were some scratches on the back, etc. And I got it a couple of days ago. I unpacked it, no scratches whatsoever. So I was like, this is probably just their way of kind of formalizing the fact that this is not a new projector. So I was eager to try it out. So I put it on a small table near the wall. I flip it on, and I connected it to the Chromecast, and it's a very small image. So, okay, I need to move it further away from the wall to enhance the picture. And yes, it does get a little bit bigger. But in order to get the screen that I had in mind and that I saw on the website, because in the website, they show you a photo of a family watching this, and the projector is like 10 inches from the wall, and you have like this massive IMAX-sized screen. Well, that image was fake. How could it be? It was an advertisement. I totally fell for it. So it turns out that in order to get the image size that I wanted on the wall, I had to move it like at least 2 meters into the room, which doesn't work with the living room that I have, because then I need to place a table in the middle of the room and it's close to the door and I can't walk in the room anymore. So it's like, if only they'd been more truthful in their advertisement, or if only I had read the reviews, I could have known this. So buyer's regret. I mean, it works, but it doesn't work well enough, so I have to send it back. And that's a hassle because it has to go back to Germany and you have to fill in like 3 pages of information and send it back, and you have to pay for the delivery yourself. So it's going to cost me. But then I'm thinking, okay, I'd better send it back now and lose a little bit of money than to have a device that I can't use, because there's not another room in the rectory that is that I can project that screen on. It's just too big. So buyer's regret. I should have known. So I'll just go back to my regular TV. It's so much more convenient. Not to mention that in order to watch a projector, you need to turn off all the lights. That's another thing that I didn't take into account, unless you have a very strong beamer or projector, but those are very expensive. But if you have a smaller one, this one is just 1,000 lux, I think. You have to completely darken the room. And then if I have to move around in the room, I'm going to, you know, hit the little table on which I placed the projector. So it's not practical. So I have to send it back. One thing that also, two other small devices that came in the mail this week are for work. They are the DJI Pocket, which is a tiny little gimbal with a 4K camera. We already tried it out a little bit. It is amazing. I can't believe how tiny it is. I can't wait to show it to you. The only thing is we can't record anything with it because it needs a fast SD card, one of those tiny micro cards. And we didn't have those because I'm using the bigger ones and the slower ones for my current equipment. It's just HD. For 4K, you need something that's much faster. So I ordered a micro SD card yesterday, so that will come in tomorrow. So I'll hopefully be able to test it out before the end of the year. Another device that came in is kind of similar. It's a Xiaomi Yi 360 VR camera. Also records in more than 4K. I think it records in 5.6K or like a very high resolution. And it's a 360 camera. And I think I already mentioned that in one of the previous shows. I want to do some experiments with that. It was dirt cheap. I got more than half off. So I paid about $150 for something that is really one of the best VR cameras out there, or one of the best 360 cameras out there. And I have some ideas about what kind of stories I want to try out with that. But that one also needs one of those SD cards. So we're still in the experimental phase. Something tells me that I'm not going to regret those two purchases because they open new creative abilities, and especially for my television work and for the documentaries. Having a secondary camera that is really light, you could just literally put in the pocket of your coat and bring along, and at the same time delivers amazing quality. That is just what we needed for our television production. It will save us a lot of money in the long run because, for instance, for our Christmas episodes, we had to bring in another cameraman. I'm always filming myself, but we brought in someone else to film. And, well, that is costly. And it also slows you down because we love to run and gun when it comes to filming. And since we always carry light equipment, we keep it very simple. We still go for quality, but we don't want to lug around too much heavy equipment. Having this secondary super tiny small camera that at the same time is able to deliver 4K super stable images, I think it's exactly what the doctor ordered, so I can't wait to try it out. And with that, we have come to the end of this episode. Again, my apologies to the chat room that are having some audio issues. We'll look into that later on. We'll fix it. But fortunately, you as a podcast listener didn't have to suffer through that. Thank you for listening. If you want to support me, go over to patreon.com/FatherRoderick. Have a wonderful preparation to Christmas, and I will talk to you soon. Take care, and God bless.